Before we get to the podcast, I wanted to invite you to the Pipeline Conference. The theme of this year's conference will be succession at every level. The event will be held October 11 through 13 here in Nashville, Tennessee. The focus of this event will be succession all the way from senior leadership at a church to the preschool and even the parking volunteers. That means that this conference is for your whole leadership team and any volunteers who you'd like to join you. Our speakers will include John Piper, Bob Russell, H.B. Charles, Tom Rayner, and more. Again, this event is October 11 through 13 here in Nashville. We will have separate coaching days on October 11 and 13, with the main event being the 12th. These days provide your team a chance to get focused, engaged training from our team. We have early bird discounts running through July 31st, so there's still time to take advantage of these, along with our fantastic group rates if you want to bring your team. Go to myleadershippipeline.com to learn more about the event and to register your team. Again, that's myleadershippipeline.com, and don't forget to take advantage of our early bird and group discounts before July 31st.
You're listening to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Todd Adkins, and I'm here with Daniel M.
Hello, hello.
We are sans Barnabas today.
Yes, psalm.
I don't
know how to say it. If you're going to use French, you got to say it appropriately.
Well, I don't know French.
Then why'd you use sans?
Because I've seen it various okay. and sundry places. And you're Canadian, so yes. You can use French.
Yep.
We didn't learn that where I'm from.
No.
We are here today with a very fun guest, Nikki Gumbel, who is over Alpha and various and sundry things as well. So I am very much looking forward to this conversation. Yeah. We have a mutual friend in Brad Lominick who simply raves about him all the time. So I think we're going to have a fun conversation today.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Alpha has been such a huge part of the previous church I was at when I was in Canada. We did this massive province-wide evangelism campaign connected with churches. You know, it was an alliance church, and we were with Lutherans and Presbyterians, Baptists, yeah. Pentecostals, all together, just leveraging the Alpha curriculum for evangelism. And it was amazing to see the life transformation that happened as a result.
So we were at McLean Bible Church in DC for 8 years, and we also had Alpha as well. And it's a relational apologetic. But very relational.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and you know what? Maybe we should actually let Nikki talk.
Yeah, Nikki can talk about it way better than both of us.
Why don't you take this opportunity to introduce yourself and talk a little bit about what you do? I know you do more than that. So talk a little bit about who you are and what you do.
So I'm Nikki Gumbel, and I'm the vicar of Holy Trinity Brompton, which is an Anglican church in the center of London. And together with my wife, Pippa, we've been involved in Alpha for quite a long time, and that's grown. So we're involved in that. We're involved in church planting around London and outside. And we're involved in a theological college that we started together with the Bishop of London. And we're involved in various... We do a little leadership conference here in London and various other things. We do a thing called the Bible in 1 year each day. Taking people through the Bible in 1 year, a Bible. It's kind of like, what is it? It's an app that people can go through the whole Bible in a year.
Oh, cool.
And we do a bit of the Psalm, bit of the New Testament, bit of the Old Testament, and we go through the Bible in a year. So we do various things.
Yeah, I love that, how you're encouraging Bible through a year, because some of the research that we've done on the effectiveness of discipleship and of maturity, it really comes down to the frequency in individuals reading the Bible. So I love that. Well, let's get into our questions. The first one today is, who are you learning from?
I think we're learning from so many people. We've just had a leadership conference at the Albert Hall, and we had just a variety of speakers. We had a Catholic cardinal, Cardinal Tagle, who was really inspiring. He had organized the fifth largest event in human history when the Pope came to Manila. We had 6,000 people at the Albert Hall in here. So his event was 1,000 times bigger than that.
Whoa.
So wow. he had So 6 million people in one place.
How is that even possible?
And giving them communion. You know, imagine giving 6 million people communion. And then he has a church of 82 million Catholics. That's larger than the entire global Anglican church. And then he heads up Caritas, which is the largest charity in the world. And you think, probably nobody had heard of him before the conference. Wow. But he set the place alight. He was so humble, gracious, funny, hilarious, had us all rolling with laughter, and so inspiring. Mm. So I interviewed Jean Vanier. Do you know who Jean Vanier is? Have you heard of Jean Vanier?
Yeah, definitely.
So Jean Vanier is another Catholic who had, at the age of 30, so his father was Governor General of Canada. At the age of 32, he left the Navy because he visited what was then called an asylum. So a place for people with serious developmental issues, mentally and physically. He took three of them home with him. And then that community has grown to just so many. I think there are about 1,500 similar communities now around the world. He's been given every honor. He's been nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. He's been Legion d'honneur, every kind of award for what he's done. And he's 89, so he couldn't come to the conference, but we went over that. Actually, it was a very good thing in a way, because we interviewed him in L'Arche, which is the place where he started this community.
Yeah.
And you see this extraordinary man who is so full of love. Hmm. There's one bit where he talked, because we went over there and we met some of them. And there's a guy called Sebastian who, we had dinner in a home there. None of them can move or speak. And him talking to this guy, Sebastian, just saying, Sebastian, you're beautiful. You're really beautiful. And it's just so moving to see this love that comes from someone, and a totally different perspective on what life is all about. His point is, life is all about connectiveness. It's not about all the things that people pursue in terms of money and success and career and power and all this stuff. It's about connecting. And I asked him about leadership, and I said, what's most important about leadership? And he said, tenderness. And it's such a powerful word, tenderness.
Yeah.
So that was such an inspiring interview. We had other speakers at the conference with John Gray and Priscilla Shara. And both of them said that they were forever changed just by hearing Jean Vanier speak and Cardinal Tagle. Priscilla came for the whole conference, which was amazing. Mm. But it was, so we had Catholics, we had Pentecostals, we had Simon Sinek came. He was fantastic. He really connected with people. We had Marcus Mumford. I don't know if you know Mumford and Sons. He interviewed a couple of people who had just been through such trauma. A charity called War Child. We had a comedian called Miranda Hart, who was hilarious. It was just a wonderful variety. And I think it's just learning from a whole different range of people. What I love about the church is its variety. Yeah. Catholic, Pentecostal, you know, all these different parts of the church. And I think so often we don't hear from each other. And when you get the whole variety in the same room, something amazing happens. So I think for me, it's learning from everybody. We can learn from Simon Sinek. Simon Sinek says, I'm certainly not a Christian, but we learned so much from him. We can learn from everybody.
Yeah,
he was he was on our podcast last year, and he, I don't know what he talked about at the conference, but when I asked him this question about who are you learning from, he said gaming theory, and he started talking about infinite games, and it was the most spiritual. It was the most spiritually provoking thing that I would say happened to me. In all of 2016, because I understood that I'm an infinite being in an infinite game. And he didn't describe it that way, but I'm like, how many times do I go to bed at night thinking about whether I won or lost that day. And yes, I lost because, you know, apart from Christ, I am a loser. But the big thing that I walked away with there is, wow, you know, just being an infinite being in an infinite game and understanding that it's not about whether I win or lose. It's about, you know, becoming better each day and becoming more Christ-like each day.
Yeah. I think he's a prophetic voice, actually, to our generation. It was extraordinary how apt his message was, his insights into churches, into leadership, into faith, actually, were absolutely extraordinary. So, I mean, I think to answer your question, learning from everyone.
Yeah. Good deal.
That's what I like interviewing, by the way, because the heart, that proverb, the heart of each person is a deep well. And the wise person draws it out. And to me, the greatest joy of the leadership conference was interviewing these people and seeing what a deep well is inside every human heart.
Yeah, I especially love how you brought out Jean Vanier, because I remember reading his book in Becoming Human in my undergrad, and I haven't heard anyone reference him in over a decade, if not more. So I appreciate that.
Good deal. Well, I want to move us on to our second question, and that is, what is the main point of emphasis of your leadership right now, either for your team or yourself, for your church?
Well, I sort of trying to think about what I was going to say at this conference, I was trying to think through what is distinctive about Christian leadership. And it seems to me that what's distinctive about Christian leadership is it's not love, because all leadership should be about love. In fact, love is where leadership begins. And I think leadership should never be an end in itself. Love is the supreme end. But leadership is a means to an end. If leadership ever becomes an end in itself, it's like wanting to be famous for the sake of being famous.
Yeah,
leadership is a means to achieving things, and it should be a means of loving. But what is distinctively about Christian love is first of all its motivation. We love because He first loved us.
Yeah,
there's a different motivation. So that's if you like God the Father. Then God the Son, we have a model. It's not just, Jesus could be a model for people who are not Christians, actually, but it's different because, so Sandy Miller, who was the former vicar of HGB, was my model for leadership. But it wasn't just that I read about Sandy in a book and said, I'm inspired by this person, I'm going to learn from him. I actually spent 19 years as his assistant.
Okay.
And that's how I learned from his model. And learning from the model of Jesus is spending time with Jesus. That's what's distinctively Christian. You don't read about in a book, but it's a daily experience of, Jesus said, as the Father has loved me, I have loved you. Love one another as I have loved you.
Yeah.
That's the second thing. Third thing is the fact that we are the motor. So the motor's different, the model's different, and the motor is the Holy Spirit. It's the love of God being poured into our hearts by the Holy Spirit. So that is, again, distinctively Christian. It's the experience of God's love for us poured into our hearts by the Holy Spirit. So it's that kind of Trinitarian understanding of love that is distinctively Christian. So yeah. I think that's what we're trying to live out as a community. And once everything revolves around love, it has a different, the community has a different feel. Yeah. And I think what we saw in L'Arche with Jean Vanier, and that's what we're aiming for here in our leadership team, in everything we do. It's ultimately everything is about love.
Yeah, that's good. Now, here's a little bit of a bonus question, because when you told me about Sandy and how you were was his assistant for 19 years, and then took over. This fall, we have a conference coming up on succession, and I'd love for you just to, if you could just share in a couple minutes how that transition took place and maybe just tease that out a little bit for us.
Well, I tried to prevent the transition taking place for as long as possible. And I always say to Sandy every time I see him, come back. Because I just loved it when he was the vicar here. He had the ultimate responsibility. He's the greatest Christian leader, actually the greatest leader I've ever come across in my life. Mm. And I loved working for him. I loved learning from him, and I wanted him to stay for as long as possible. And I managed to persuade him for a bit. I managed to stop him. He kept saying he was going, and I managed to persuade him not to. And eventually he said, I'm going in 2 years anyway. And the only question is whether you take over from me or not. But so I couldn't stop him at that point. And he did it absolutely brilliantly. The fact that we had 2 years of handover was, so I had 2 years to prepare for it.
Okay.
And then everything about the way he did it was he prepared the ground for me. And then when he left completely. You couldn't see him for dust. You know, he'd gone. Hmm. He went to a very poor area in London, one of the toughest areas, and took on the job of leading a church there in a very small community with a really tough place to go. Wow. It wasn't that he needed to stop. He just chose that this was the moment.
Yeah.
Over. And he gave, and then he has supported me 100%. He is the most loyal person. You would never get him to say a single word. And of course, things have changed here, inevitably. One of my biggest fears of taking over was that, in a sense, I didn't want to change anything because I didn't want it to be a critique of Sandy. But my son helped me. He said, in order to stay the same, you have to change. If you don't paint your house, it doesn't stay the same. It deteriorates. You have to change it in order for it to stay the same. So he said, we want HDB to stay the same, but in order for HDB to stay the same, it has to change. So the lot of things.
That's so good. I just want to close in prayer right now.
So a lot of changes have taken place, but Sandy is just always totally supportive. And in fact, a lot of people go and see him from here, and I encourage them to, because I always say you're never going to learn more about leadership than from Sandy. Go and spend some time with him, and he's always happy to see them. But I know that the more they go and see him, the more supportive they're going to be, because he is so loyal. And I think Sandy modeled so many things to me, but one of the things he modeled was how to do succession well. And I didn't see it done that often really, really well, but Sandy definitely did it really, really well.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much for entertaining us there. That was awesome. That was awesome. Well, our next question is, what are two or three things you must absolutely do daily, and what benefit do they have for your life and your leadership?
Okay, the thing that I do first thing in the morning, so Sandy gave me, in 1990, he gave me so that's like 27 years ago, he gave me a Bible for Christmas, and it's the Bible in 1 year, and I've still got it, it's actually sitting right in front of me right now. And day one is Genesis 1-17, Matthew 1:1-25, and Psalm 1:1-6. And I used it every year for about 17 years. Hmm. And then I started, I thought, I'll send these comments to around to our church, so that we're all doing the same passage each day. And I would, so on January the 1st, I'd send out a few comments on those verses, and Pippa would add a bit, and it would be Pippa adds, and she put a bit on the bottom. And then we did that, and I started doing it for 2.5 hours each day. And I did that for about 5 years, and it developed into this kind of thing, and then it went into an app. But I still do it every morning. So I'm doing the same passages, but basically I'm editing what goes out.
Okay.
Because it's out much more widely. Because YouVersion took it up, And that meant it went to a far wider audience. Yes. Yeah. But that's the first thing I do. And that to me is so important because it's hearing God speak to you. You know, Jesus said people can't live on bread alone, but every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. And it's like there's a spiritual hunger in every human heart that can only be satisfied by hearing God's words. So that's the very first thing I do. But after a bit, it was like 2.5 hours doing this every day. It was like, I never got to pray. I was kind of always just reading the Bible. Yeah. So about 4 or 5 years ago, I limited myself to 1 hour on the Bible in 1 year. And I try and stick to that. And what I do then is we live next to a beautiful park. We're so blessed because we're in the center of London, but we're next to Hyde Park. And I walk around Hyde Park because I find it if I sit in a chair, I would just fall asleep. But I walk around Hyde Park. It's completely deserted at that time of the day. And in winter, I go as soon as it begins to get light. And I walk around and it's 45 minutes. And I go exactly the same route every single day. So I don't have to think about where I'm going. And that's a time which is just amazing. That's the time to pray. And it's a different pattern every day, but it's kind of like just sometimes I get very distracted. Sometimes my mind wanders. But basically, it's a time when I talk to God, talk to Jesus. And often it starts, a lot of it is Thanksgiving. There's so much to give thanks for. And then I find about halfway round, I start to get ideas. And I sense the Spirit beginning to speak to me. Sometimes it's very clear, sometimes it's not, but it's kind of, that's the second thing that I would say is a sort of absolute essential that I do every day. And the third thing is, I would say part of that, because this is something that's new, which is that between the Bible and 1 year, and going out to pray, I take my wife a cup of tea and we pray. And that we haven't always done. We did it very early on in our marriage, but we started doing it for about the last 6 months. So I give her a cup of tea. I get down on my knees. She's still under the duvet every day. So that's kind of like morning routine. But there's another thing that I do every day is I play squash.
I love squash.
Do you love squash?
Oh, you know, it's sad. No one plays it down here.
No, I have no idea what you're talking about right now.
It's like racquetball, only much, much better.
Oh, I completely agree with you.
It's basically like the difference between cricket and baseball.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I have to face my squash rackets in my closet every single day. Just, I'm sad that I can't play it down here. But
so I have a little routine. I get on my bike and I bike 15 minutes down to a gym. I play squash. Then I do some weights. I do some stretching. And then I get back on my bike and I bike back. And then I feel so great for the rest of the... So I like to start early and I usually finish quite late. But I have that about 2.5 hours in the middle of the day when I... and I have a load of friends down there who are totally outside of the church. Mm. And in my diary, it's down as evangelism. So nobody knows that I'm just at the gym playing squash.
Hey, it's true, though. It is.
It is
true. I mean, that's how it goes.
But it's so interesting. I just find the fascinating community because what it does is it stops you having a sort of very judgmental view about the world. Mm. You realize that there are people outside of the church who are amazing. Sometimes I'm really inspired by how they live their lives, challenged by it. But also it helps me with Alpha. It's helped me so much with Alpha because I've been a member of that same club for 27 years. Yeah. And so I know all those people really, really well. But it helped me in doing the talks on Alpha to realize just who you're talking to. You're talking to some amazing people. And I sometimes hear evangelistic talks that almost talk down to people as if, you know, we're some kind of superior group teaching them how to live. And you realize it's not like that. We're all flawed human beings. Yeah. We're no better. Hopefully we're better than we were before, but we're no better than anybody. I love it. That's something else that I do pretty much every day, because that's one of the keys, I think, to, for me, just getting a break in the day and doing something physical is really important.
And I appreciate how you spelt that out for us. If the one thing you said, I had to limit my Bible reading to an hour. I mean, if the majority of not just pastors, but individuals, Christians, would even just do half of that, I mean, the transformation that would take place would be incredible.
And I really appreciate you just living out the relational evangelistic lifestyle that, you know, you profess. My undergrad was in philosophy, and I didn't go to a Bible college. So needless to say, I think I was the only believer that was in that college. But the interesting thing to me was, over the course of time, the conversations I would have because of the relationships that I had made. I could not have, argued them into faith. And certainly if I had preached at them, I wouldn't have won them over. But it was over the course of time, when different things would happen in their family or with their life, or, you know, they would lose somebody, either a relationship that meant a lot to them, or, you know, a parent. I can just remember different situations that I would not have been able to minister to them had I not had that relationship and that cadence of relationship with them. So I love that.
Yeah.
I want to move us into our next question and get more personal, even more personal than we have been so far. And that is, what does leadership in your home look like? Over the years, what does it look like? But what does it look like now?
So I'm married to Pippa, and we have three children who are grown up. We got married quite young, and we had, our eldest son is 38, and he is married and lives in India. He's married to an Indian, Anglo-Indian, and they live in Bangalore. Mm. And then our second son is 35, and he is living in Brighton. He is the associate vicar, like the associate pastor, at one of our church plants in Brighton, and he's married and he has three children, aged 5, 3, and 1. And then our daughter is also, she is 33. And she's married someone who's half Indian, who's a rapper, a number of other things as well.
That is awesome.
And they have two children, Brave, Elijah Farr, Nikki Peace Ocean, and Freedom. Oh, I can't even begin.
I love too that.
Too many names. Anyway, so they've got two children. So we have five grandchildren. So what does leadership look like? Well, I think I've already given an example of Johnny's advice to me. I would say our children are by far our best advisors. Mm. If I was going for advice, I would go to those three, probably more than anybody. And I think the relationship has completely switched. I'm not sure they learn anything from us anymore, but we certainly learn a huge amount from them. So that's, none of them are living at home. So it's a slight, they do sometimes come and live. Our son and daughter-in-law were back from India and they were with us for 6 months. Mm. And hopefully they're back at the end of June and they'll be living here again, which will be wonderful. Yeah. My daughter and son-in-law also came to live in the house for a few months, which is wonderful. When we try and see as much of them, and, it's just such a wonderful thing, isn't it? Grandchildren are such a blessing. Mm. So it's a fun time of life. I think it's an exciting season for Pips as well. She's having never spoken anywhere. She is stepping into more of a, she does a talk on Alpha now, our Alpha course. Never able to persuade her to do a talk on Alpha, but the person who now leads Alpha at HCB managed to persuade her. So I'm so thrilled about that. And we lead a bit more. All the services, we stand up together and we lead together. And the leadership conference we do together, we lead it together. Everything we try, and our church family thing focus, we have now about 7,000 people coming to that, and we co-host that together. So it's fun. I think it's just fun doing things together. I think when the children were younger, it was harder for her to get to as many things as now. And one of the things I love about now is that we basically do everything together, and that's such a blessing.
Yeah, I love that. Can't wait for that day. My, I have a 7, 6, and a 2-year-old. So
mine are 8, 6, and 4.
Okay, they're great. They are great seasons. Enjoy every moment. It's so short. You think they'll be with you forever?
Yeah.
But then it's quite a short season.
It's a good
Enjoy
word.
Enjoy every day.
It's a good word. Well, Nikki, this brings us to our last question, and it's one of my personal favorites. What would you tell your 20-year-old self about preparing to lead?
I think don't worry about stupid things. I think as I look back, I've worried about a lot of things that weren't that important. So much of the stuff we worry about doesn't actually matter. I think it's very interesting. One of the first people. So when I took on Alpha in October 1990, it was a course for new Christians. And a guy turned up on week 5 who was not a Christian. He had rowed twice for Cambridge. He was a double blue. He was 6'4", very good looking, very charming guy. And the person who brought him said, look, Matthew has just come. He's heard that there's some very attractive, average age on Alpha is very young. he's heard there's some very attractive young women on the course, and he's come to have a look around. He's only going to stay for the talk. He's not going to stay for the small group. So I did something a little bit naughty, which I not deputy recommend, but I was tempted. So during the coffee break, I introduced him to the most attractive young woman on the course. And he changed his mind and decided he would stay for the small group. And he stayed for the whole course, and he became a Christian.
Wow.
And he married Pippa's sister, younger sister. She's 14 years younger than Pippa. So he's now my brother-in-law. So Matthew, a year ago yesterday, he was biking along, age now 49. He's biking along with some friends. They're on a long bike ride, and his heart stops. He has a cardiac arrest and flies off his bike, lands on his head, cracks his skull in two places, and his heart has stopped dead. There was somebody in the biking with him who was able to do sort of very basic first aid. But what was extraordinary was passing the other way, there was a car driven by a consultant anaesthetist who got out, and he had a bag in his car, had a tube so he could get oxygen into his lungs. Within 12 minutes, the paramedics were there. 17 minutes, there was an air ambulance there. And within an hour, he had a stent in him.
Wow.
So Pip's sister, Sam, got to the hospital, and the consultant cardiologist said, in my experience, it never turns out well in these situations. And she got everyone praying. And 5 days later, he squeezed her hand, and she knew that he was alive.
Wow.
And So yesterday was the 1 year anniversary, and he was, they stayed with us for the weekend. He's made the most remarkable recovery. And I preached a talk, which is basically a lot of it was about him, because what's happened to him is he has totally changed as a person. He is the happiest man on the planet. He's the most smiley, joyful, full of love. And he was always a great guy, but he has a totally different perspective on life.
Wow.
Before he was, you know, he was a successful businessman. He still runs a business, you know, medium-sized business. He's got 100 people working for him. But his attitude has totally changed. Everything is about relationships now. Number one is his relationship with God. He is totally, you know, walking with the Lord day in, day out, hour in, hour out. He's just completely focused. His face is shining. He totally puts his wife above everything, his children, his friendships. And he says before, so he's still not, he went on a 5-hour bike ride the other day. So he's back to, you know, full fitness and all the rest of it. But he says now, he described his life being like a tower with God at the top, then his wife, then his children, then his friends, other relationships, and three guide ropes holding it up, which are his job, his business, his other activities, and his sport. And he says the difference is before, if he wanted to do, you know, a 5-hour bike ride, he would do it anyway. Now he will only do it if it doesn't in any way detract from the relationships at the top of that tower. So if in any way going off for a 5-hour bike ride would detract from his relationship with his wife Sam, he won't do it. If he was to work in such a way in his business so that it detracted from his relationship with his wife or his children, he wouldn't do it, because his priorities have totally changed. Yeah. Because he said in that time he felt himself being held by Jesus. I was like a parent with a child, and he knew that it was true. I mean, the other thing is he says, I have absolutely no fear of death. I'm really looking forward to it. Of course, I want to stay because of my relationships here and the responsibilities I have for my family. But if I die tonight, I will be so happy. He does say, I'm absolutely determined to tell all my friends this is real, because now I realize it could have happened to me in an instant, and it could happen to them in an instant. And I want them to know this really is true. He said, before I used to have doubts about whether it was true. So now I know it's true. I've experienced it. And it's true, and it's so important. But what's interesting is his whole perspective has changed, and he sees him that ultimately what matters in life is relationships, is people that count. All the other things are secondary. And I think if we get that, say exactly the same actually of as Jean Vanier. Jean Vanier said, you know, people chase after fame and success and career and money and all these things. And he said, actually, life is all about connectedness. It's all about relationships. And what the large community where all these people can do nothing. They can achieve nothing. Most of them can't even move or speak. But you can connect with them. You can connect with them through eye movements. You can love them. And that is what life is about. So I think if I'd realized that at 20, that would have helped me not to worry about things that actually are not that important in life. The things that matter are your relationship with God, your relationship with if you're married, with your husband or wife, your relationship with your children. That's what matters. Your relationship with your friends. Love is what matters in life. Nothing else really matters.
Yeah. Wow, Nikki, what a story to end our time together. I so appreciate you taking the time to share that and just how not only is Alpha something that is a part of your church, that is a part of who you are, the ministry that God has called you to lead, but just that transformation amongst your family as well. Well, he is Nikki Gumbel. Be sure to check out alpha.org to see Bear Grylls. His story as well.
I remember seeing that.
Yeah, and also just the revamped Alpha curriculum as well. I highly, highly, highly encourage you to check it out and use it for your church. It's been transformational for me. You know, we've used it, and man, Nikki, it's just been such an honor to be with you on the podcast.
Thank you so much. It's great to be with you.
Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Don't forget to visit myleadershippipeline.com to learn more about our fall conference, October 11 through 13 here in Nashville, and to take advantage of our early bird and group discounts. Again, that's myleadershippipeline.com, and the early bird deadline is July 31st, so move quickly to take advantage of these discounts.